Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Those of you that listen to my podcast, to the Human Technology Podcast, a longer time will know that I usually make a summer break. And it's a little late this year when I'm recording this. It's already almost middle of August. But I will be making a summer break. So this is the last episode. And I plan to be back mid-October, probably, when I had my summer vacation. So I will have a very late summer vacation. It's almost fall vacation or autumn vacation. And I will make a break. So don't wonder if you do not see any new episodes. If you are in the mood to listen to me, to my voice, if you want to grab some of my thoughts, don't hesitate to listen to one of the older episodes. I'm always surprised of how many I have already recorded and how much knowledge is available there for my listeners. The last episode before the summer break will be a little more a personal one. So I will talk about 12 different points that things I learned during my business time. I started my business in 2015. It's almost 9 years. Now it's more than 9 years now. And sorry, I learned a couple of things there. And so I will be talking a bit about that one. And it's 12, so it's a dozen, and it's not a dirty dozen. Some of you, maybe the older one, will know the Hollywood movie. It's a World War II movie from the late 60s called The Dirty Dozen. It is a clean dozen. It's a clean dozen things that I will talk about. A couple of things, a couple of thoughts that I have learned and I think are valuable for you as well. Number one, I have my values. I have a set of values, and some of them are, let's say, things like freedom, like honesty, like respect, and there's one in sales that says, let's put it the other way around. There are sales gurus out there. There are people out there that say, approach everyone, make 100 calls per day, and then you press them, those people into some kind of contract, into some kind of business. And in Germany, we have two guys. One is called Martin Limbeck. The other one is called Dirk Kräuter. There are in the English world, English-speaking world, there will be similar people. There will be people in your country that teach you things like this. You have to press people, and you have to, and don't expect a no, don't do this, and just move forward and make sales, and you have to call 100 people per day, and then you will make 10 contracts, and so every no that you receive moves you forward towards a yes. And I don't believe in this. And my world, and this is the beautiful Annabelle Whitney. She's one of my mentors in both the speaking business and also business in general. She said, I get active for people and companies that need exactly what I offer, that need it right now, and they need it from just me. And I always had with these power sales guys, I had my problems. I could not really put it into words why I had this problem. But when she said this to me, I said, yes, of course, yes, we share this particular value that we say we are seeking for people that are looking for a knowledge, that are looking for it right now, not maybe in a year or two, but right now, and that want it from me, that are ready to work with me, that communicate with me, to learn from me. Then we get together, then we have business, and then we will end up with a satisfying situation for all of us. Number two, it is always more complex than you think in the beginning. When I talk to my clients, I very often think, oh, that's an easy one. Yes, of course, I will write this report, I will give this keynote, I will provide them with this workshop, and then it's easy, it's done, and all good. The more you get into an issue, the more you get into a question of a client, the more facets it gets, the more details pop up, the more sub-questions pop up. And so at the end, it gets more complex than you think in the beginning. You have to calculate this. You have to, if you write an offer, if you say, yes, this is going to take me 3 weeks, this is going to take me 3 months, whatever it is, always add a little add-on. Make a little buffer into it so that you say, okay, because my experience is at the very end, it's always a little more complex, or much more complex even sometimes, than you think in the beginning. Number three, structuring helps. I have one of my educations is in engineering, so I have a degree in mechanical engineering. I have also studied psychology, but my main education is in mechanical engineering, and engineering guys can be extremely structured and very well sorted out, and doing this first and analyzing and identifying the main issues and then the sub-issues of the main issues. And when I start writing a report, the first thing I do is write more or less the list of contents, all the headlines and the sub-headlines that I have. And then I know, okay, well, these are the things I already know. I can fill this in. Here I have to do a couple of researches. There I have to talk to an expert from another domain to get this one. This is something I need to clarify with my client. And so it gets very easy even to write a text of, at the moment I'm working on a report that will end up probably between 120 and 150 pages. And if you do not have a structure, if you do not have a guideline, if you do not sort things out, identify the main issues and the sub-main issues, and just start working somewhere and putting it down somehow, it may end up in the right way, but it will take enormous amounts of effort. So in the beginning, sorting things out and putting everything into the right place is extremely helpful. Number four, I'm really good in the things I'm really good in. And that's why my clients love me. I stopped doing things that I'm not good in. So the very first thing I did when I started my business was engaging an accountant. And she's still working for me, and I'm not very good in all the tax paying things and leading my accounts. And so she's doing all that for me. So I'm collecting all the invoices that I'm paying, all the invoices I get paid for. And every beginning of a month, I send all that stuff to her, and she's doing the magic, she's doing voodoo. And then in the mid of a year, I send all the other stuff for the annual tax declaration, and she's doing all the magic, she's doing voodoo for me. And the same for web administration. Maybe I could work myself into it, but I said, no, I'm not good in it, and I want to do it, and I will focus on the things I'm good in. And Same thing if I work for a client and there are things I don't really know. There are things where I have open questions. I'm reaching out for experts in my networks. Either they teach me or they work for me, and then I will deliver something that is flawless, that is perfect, that is valuable, that is helpful for my clients, and not something that is somehow good, mediocre. And this, I think, is one of the reasons why my clients hire me, because I have a very specific knowledge and I have a, what I believe, very specific way of delivering that. And that's why my clients hire me. And if they don't, if they want to have something different, they can hire somebody different. And if I have some aspects in a report or in a workshop that I cannot really cover, then I'm seeking for another expert that gives his or her input into it. And yes, so this is another focus point that I had and helps me doing the right things. Number five, I am allowed to have fun when I do what I do. Particularly in Germany, when you start a business, everybody says, oh, now the fun is over. You have to work day and night. And you have to learn all the things about business. And it's really hard to run a company, to run a business. And do you really want this? And I said, yeah, of course I want this. And in the beginning, it was hard for me when I found out I'm having fun what I'm doing. I'm making money with things I'm good in and with things I'm having fun with. And I needed to learn over time, it's absolutely perfect to have this. It's not only allowed, it is perfect to have fun doing what I want to do. I love to go onto a stage and give a keynote. And I think that's the reason why people give me the feedback that they learn a lot, that they're inspired. If I go out there and say, oh, this is super hard and I have to be very serious, then you do not inspire people. Same with my reports, with when I deliver my knowledge. If I really believe what I'm doing, then I'm really good in it. And then I'm, when I have fun, I'm just delivering in a better way. That's the major thing if you do systemic coaching, you ask questions and you try to find out what's really behind it. And I'm using these techniques with my clients to find out what is the real thing they want to know about. I had a project when a big first-tier supplier automotive asked me what are the OEMs having for processes in the HMI development and the human machine interface development. How do they do this? How do they make their decisions? And very good question. And of course I can answer this question, but my feeling at this point was there must be something behind it. There is more behind this than just the questions, how are the OEMs running their processes? And the weird question of another is, but how do we get our own totally chaotic, almost non-existing processes under control? How can we set up ourselves to be ready to work with whomever and to be on the same level? And I found this out pretty quickly and gave them the right answer. Of course, I told them on how the OEMs work. On the other hand, I was able to set them up and say, hey, guys, yeah, you have a serious problem here. Let's move on to the correct direction and we'll solve the problem. And that was something that, yeah, the question behind the question. That is what I learned over time, that this is usually the thing, very often the thing, that is what I need to think about. Number seven, purchasers are very special persons. Usually I start talking with the developers, with the developmental departments. I meet them in conferences or they approach me, they send me an email, say, hey, we have this problem, can you help us? And we discuss it. And when I have the feeling that I understand what to do and that I talked about the complexity a few minutes ago, when I understand the complexity, then I write an offer. And I sent this one to the development department. They check it out and I said, yes, this is what we want from you. They pass it on to the purchasers. And the purchasers, they start talking about the business part. And they have a totally different way of thinking and acting, and they look at an offer on a totally different way. And I know this. I learned this over time. I already learned this in my last fixed position that I had, but I experience it regularly in my own business. You have to talk to them in a different way. Of course, they look for the compliance things, and they may also look at the content. They usually don't, but every now and then they do this. And they, of course, look at the price. That is their thing. And I know that, and I'm telling you a secret here, they have a certain amount that they need to reduce the supplier in price to get their maximum bonus. And I have a rough idea of where it is, and that is my let's say gaming margin, or the playing margin, or the the thing we can talk about. And I know the game, and I play the game, because if I want a project, I have to play it on all levels. You have to be aware, they are very special. And one of these guys, I sent it out to him, and he called me right back after 2 minutes, and he asked me, is there anything we can do on the price? I know, it was a pretty complex offer, so you usually need about 10, 15 minutes to read and understand my offer. He called within 2 minutes, so he didn't read it. He just saw the price, and he said, can we do something on the price? I think he was new in job, and he was very fresh and wanted to show up as a very tough guy, and with all the negotiations, and he's in the leading position. And yeah, so not very smart in this moment. But as I said, they're special. You have to talk with them in a different way than with developers. So they have a different focus, of course. And be aware that they are just different guys. Number 8, there is nothing better than a personal face-to-face conversation. If you have a problem, if you want to know things, if you want to ask questions, of course, we have Zoom, we have Teams, we have all these online tools, we have emails, we have messengers, and it is very good that we have them. It is very good. it's very good. And we have these opportunities of a very efficient, fast, and direct communication around the globe, talking to people in China, talking to people wherever. I experience very often that on my client's side, some of the developers, they are located in Europe. Some of them are located in America. Some of them in China. Even within Europe, they're in different locations. And getting them at one table for a personal conversation is almost impossible. So that's very good that we have these online tools. But if they have a serious problem, if you want to get really deep into something, my experience is make it face to face. Make it personal. The very first thing may be just calling someone and saying, hey, come on, we have 10 minutes. Let's discuss this and that one. I don't understand this. Please help me with this one. And they're ready to help you. People are wanting to help you if you approach them in a personal way. But the best way to do is really sit down at the table, have a good coffee, have maybe a nice dinner or a beautiful lunch, and then you discuss it. And these are the moments when, first of all, you make a personal binding to persons, when you get the valuable information, when you really move things forward. This is my experience. Number 9, patience pays off. Be patient. Particularly big companies sometimes have very long decision-making processes. And sometimes things go wrong in this process. And it's okay. Keep it in focus. Keep talking, but be patient. The same as if you have a problem finding out things, if you have a problem with a solution that you have, patience, being focused, keeping on, going on, is also a good thing. Sometimes people say to me, hey, Peter, you're far too patient. Talk to these guys. They need to make a decision right now. Call your contact person at the client and say, hey, I want to have a decision right now. No, this is not what I do. If people hate to say no, and then every now and then they have to say no, and then okay, and it is a no, but the no will remain a no if I find out today and if I find out tomorrow. So my personal belief is a little patience pays off, because sometimes things either solve themselves or solutions may take time on the other side. You don't look into different companies, into other companies. You don't know what's going on there. And so it is always good just to tell yourself, calm down, wait a moment, be friendly, and talk to the people. Number 10, I am a continuous learner. I am a heavy reader. I read a lot. I try to learn every day, learn something new. And I enjoy it. I love it. It is moving me forward. It is moving my business forward. And so I am enjoying all this, and I do this every day. The last book I finished was called Impact by a guy called Frank Asmus. Frank is a keynote speaker, and he's a keynote speaking teacher. So he's a director, a theater and movie director by education and in its origin. And he moved on to keynote speaking, and I learned a lot from him during my education at a greater when I made my keynote speaker education. All the structures, how to build a keynote, how to set it up, how is it structured? Now the intro and the outro and the three major bases in the middle. That's all things I learned from him. How the construction or the architecture of a keynote is. He, for example, is the guy that worked on the keynotes of Steve Jobs. So he was involved in many of them. And I mean, Steve Jobs was a manager. He's a top tech manager. But he gave brilliant keynotes. And it was clear to me that he did not write them by himself, because he has a different job, he has different abilities, but he delivers on a super high level. And so Frank is one of the persons that is involved, or was involved in these keynotes. And he is involved on all the many other major keynotes of big business leaders. And he wrote a book called Impact. I don't know whether it's available in English, but it has this English title, Impact. We don't use this word in German too often, but it's a German book called Impact, the English word Impact, and it's about the impact you can have with words, with written words, but first of all with spoken words. It's in keynotes, it's in direct communications, and yeah, I'm reading that, and I'm improving my skills, my talking skills here in the keynote. I'm improving them in my keynotes. I'm using all the improvements there to get a better person, better professional in this area. So it's a continuous thing. So this is the book I just finished. I'm right in the middle now of a book of Richard David Precht. He is a German philosopher. He's not one of these dead philosophers like Kant or Hegel or whomever. He is alive. He's my age. He's around 60. And he wrote a book about artificial intelligence and the meaning of life. I expected a lot from it because I like this guy. I listen to his podcast, and he's a big talker. He's talking about different things, and sometimes he's talking about things he's not having deep professional knowledge about. But I like the way he's seeing the world. I'm not agreeing in any aspect with him, but I think he's a pretty, pretty cool guy and a good thinker, a great thinker. And so I expected a lot from this book called Artificial Intelligence and the Meaning of Life. I'm run through about a third now, and I'm a bit disappointed, to be honest. Not what I really expected. But let's wait and see. I will finish it, and I'm hoping that there is some more meaning in this, that there is a little more content I can use in this book. Number 11. The world is working for me. Universe is working for me. The world and the universe, they are not against me. Every now and then it looks like the universe is against me. Things don't work out the way I expect them to be. I learned to have the patience. I talked about patience already. And wait and see what is the good behind something that has happened to me. What are the things that I can learn out of this? What is the positive and something negative that is happening to me? So it is a good thing to know the universe is not against you. The universe is always working for you. And if you have the feeling that something goes wrong and everything is against you, wait a little, have a little patience. Take a different point of view. Try to find the good in something negative that is happening. And I know there are things happening in everybody's life where it is very hard to see the good. But it is there. This is my learning. This is what I learn, and this is what I believe in. Number 12, the final one. My good friend and colleague Ilya Grashkovitz, I was on his podcast and gave him an interview. It is in German, so if you want to train your German, find it in his podcast. That he is a he's a very smart guy, and he's talking about change. And I was in his podcast giving him an interview, and he asked me, what is the one sentence that describes the secret of your success? And I replied, focus. And then there was a little break. And he said, well, that's not even a sentence, it's just a single word. But the more I think about it, the more complex it gets and the more depth this has. And this is what I'm believing. Focus. That is the thing that moves me forward, that brought me into the position I am. And this is on different levels. So this is on the, let's say, very basic level. It's in me, my focus, that I focus on things. And I started a few years ago meditation. And that helped me enormously to keep a focus. So I'm doing things today in 3 hours that took me 8 hours 10 years ago. I'm totally worn out and torn out after this. Keep up your focus for 3 hours on something and work on this and get your... That eats up enormous amounts of energy. But I still have 5 hours remaining when I can read a good book. I have a couple of online courses. It's still enough energy there for doing this. And this is the basic level of focus. And I learned this through meditation, saying, yes, I will keep my mind on one thing. I will not have my thoughts jumping around and moving away. And of course, I'll have helpers. When I'm writing on a client report, when I'm developing a keynote, when I'm making a research on something, I put my smartphone on flight mode. No messages, no calls. All the callers can leave a message in my mailbox and I will call them back. But right now, I'm focusing on one thing. I'm developing this keynote. I'm writing that report for my client. This is what I'm doing. So it's that kind of focus. I have a focus on my business. I have a focus with my business. Every now and then I'm approached by companies saying, hey, you know the entire automotive industry. You must have an excellent network. Don't you want to work as a sales guy for us, a freelance sales guy? Then I look at the service and I look at the product, and when I believe it fits into what I'm doing, and I say, yes, guys, I'm going to take you into my portfolio and I will bring you to my clients. But if it doesn't fit, if I have the feeling, no, this is not either from the value point of view or from the content point of view, this is not what I want. This is not the thing that I that fits, that's not in my focus, I don't do it. And so I'm focusing my business on human-machine interfaces, the relationship between humans and technologies, and I'm going beyond this one, looking into all the social aspects, the psychological aspects of technology. And I'm focusing on the automotive industry. I'm working for other industries every now and then if I have the feeling that I can use my knowledge. But my focus is on one thing that I'm doing here. All right, so this is my little knowledge about what I learned in my business in the past years. My clean dozen, not the dirty dozen, it's a clean dozen of points. 12 points of knowledge I wanted to drop with you before the summer break. So I wish you, if you already had your summer break, your summer vacation, I hope you had a great time and enjoyed it and charged up your batteries. I'm not having vacation. I'm working on a project at the moment for a client. So it will be very late summer vacation this year in probably first half of October. If you're still already on vacation, if you listen to me on your vacation, have fun, charge up, bring your energy onto the right level. And if you're still having your summer vacation in front of you, I wish you super happy times, enjoy it, have fun, be yourself. I'll be back in October and looking forward to it. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time. Take care and stay healthy.